This is Irene Friedman, and the program is...
It's All About Animals. Did you hear all those animals?
Yes, I did. I heard a dog.
Oh, there was a little puppy and a little pussy.
I like cats.
Oh, I do too, Irene.
Okay. Little pussy cat. Well, here's what's on the program today. We'll start off with some funny jokes.
They're hilarious.
We have our studio audience back, and then I'll continue in the chapter in... Oh, my gosh. Tell Me Where It Hurts. That's the name of it. And then we'll finish up with articles from Dogster and Catster.
Wow. How about that? Now, did you get rid of Mr. Trout?
No. Dr. Nick Trout is the author of the book. He's our veterinarian.
They are. Wow.
He is, yes.
That's a good name for a veterinarian.
Yes.
Dr. Trout.
Well, he could be Dr. Lyons.
That's true. I wonder if his... you know, medications are maybe a little fishy. What do you think?
A little fishy? Yeah. I don't know.
You want me to start, Irene?
Yes, please start.
Okay, how do Martians eat their ice creams in space? They're called ice creams in space, I guess. How do they eat their ice creams
in
space?
Is this an animal joke or not?
Well, I mean, you know, Martians, they could be animals, I guess. You never know. I don't think I've got animal jokes.
In a space cone. In a cone.
Ooh, nope.
How do Martians eat their ice cream in space?
Yep. How do Martians eat their ice creams in space?
They eat a Mars bar.
Ooh, that's pretty good too, but that's not right. No.
What's the question again? Aliens or Martians?
How do Martians eat their ice creams in space? It could be aliens too, I suppose, but Martians sound okay.
They dip down and eat them? I don't know. No. I don't know.
Well, how do Martians eat their ice creams in space?
Am I going to moan and groan when I hear this?
I hope so. In floats. You know, in space they float. So their ice creams they eat in floats.
Oh, gosh. That was a challenging one.
Yes, it was, Irene. So make an easy one for me, Irene. You know how I just like to get right in there. Yes.
Okay. Then here's an easy one for
you. Oh, good, good.
Why is a guitar opposite to a fish?
Why is a guitar opposite to a fish?
Opposite to a fish.
Wow.
It's kind of weird how they worded that.
Yeah, it sure is, because if I had a guitar, I would hold it in my hands, and I would take those strings, and I would, like, run my fingers up and down the strings, and then maybe I would have to, like, tune it. But with a fish, I don't know if you can tune a fish.
You're correct. A guitar can be tuned, but you can't tune a fish.
Okay, Irene, what is an alien's favorite place on the computer? On the computer, what's the alien's favorite place?
The space bar? Did I get it?
That's right.
I finally got one. It's been weeks since I've had it.
That's right, Irene. I finally got it to you.
Yes. Okay. What do you call a fly that has lost its wings?
What do you call a fly that has lost its wings? You know, there's a movie out there where this lady loses her wings. But if a fly lost its wings...
What's the movie?
Maleficent? I think that's how you pronounce that. And it has Angelina Jolie in it.
I did not see that.
Yeah, so that's a good show.
And then It's a Wonderful Life, the guy who saves George Bailey, he gets his wings.
Oh, I know. He goes from a guy that would go crawling from bar to bar to a guy that could probably fly there.
Right.
Okay, so what was the name, or what was it again? Question?
The joke?
Yes.
Riddle, what do you call a fly that has lost its wings?
Wow. You know, I know he got his wings and he would walk before he would fly, but a fly that loses its wings, would it be like a walk?
Yes. It's a walk, yes. Guys, you're just too good today.
Okay, so what kind of currency do aliens use, Irene? What type of currency do aliens use? This is fairly easy, Irene, to you. Oh, yeah. Oh, you're going to moan. You're going to groan unless you happen to get it real quick.
Currency.
Yes. What kind of currency do aliens use?
You mean like pesos as opposed to dollars or?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Maybe. I mean, it's their own currency, I guess, because it's a kind of currency that aliens use. If you were an alien and you landed here, I mean, if you were up there, you'd probably give them a dollar or something. But what would aliens carry? It wouldn't be a Discover card or anything like that. I mean, what kind of currency are they using?
Let's see. Ruples?
Nope.
Francs? Nope. I don't know.
What kind of currency
this is tough.
Aliens use? Starbucks!
Wait a minute. Wouldn't that be what kind of coffee they drink?
Nope, it's Bucks. They're Starbucks.
Okay.
Because they're aliens.
Those are good jokes. You're in tip-top form today. Okay, if you lend money to a bison, what is it?
If I lend money to
a bison, what is it?
It's probably gone, Irene, because that bison never paid me back.
Well, not the bison. I think they mean to say if you lend money to a bison, yeah, what's this process of lending money to a bison?
Well, because they'd go buy some.
No.
Nope. I'd go buy some if I had some money.
If you lend money to a bison, what is it?
Spent.
No.
Because they would go out and buy some.
No.
No, I don't know, Irene.
Are you giving up?
I'm giving up.
It's a buffalone.
Ah!
A buffalone.
That was pretty good.
Do you have any more? I think we have time for just one more from you.
One more, okay. What do you get when you cross a weeping willow and a UFO? What do you get when you cross a weeping willow with a UFO? Now, this is easy. I mean, everybody knows this.
A tree?
A weeping willow tree, yes.
A tree, a weeping willow. Does it have to be a weeping willow?
Yep. What do you get when you cross a weeping willow with a UFO?
I don't mean to be contributing all this dead air time, but I'm just sitting here in absolute silence.
Well, you're scratching your head a little bit.
Yes, because these are tough.
Oh, they're not that tough.
Weeping willow with a
With a UFO.
With a UFO.
Yes.
What
do you get when you cross a weeping willow with a UFO? And a UFO? A crying saucer.
Oh, my gosh. Those were good. I'd like to know who your source is.
He's a PI, I think.
Oh, like a private investigator?
Yes.
Do you know a
yes.
private investigator?
I think maybe I do, Irene.
I won't pursue that.
Okay, Irene.
Well, thank you so
Bye-bye.
Much. You've contributed a lot Bye-bye. Today to our program. Now we're going to move back to Tell Me Where It Hurts by veterinarian Nick Trout. And the chapter I started last week or 2 weeks ago, Salad Days, these are long chapters. He's dealing with a man named Mr. Measley, who is rather crude in his language and just his entire demeanor. He's kind of loud and rude and crude, but he's brought his dog in, and he's thinking his dog is becoming a little bit effeminate and wondering what's going on. So let me backtrack one paragraph, and then I'll continue with this. And it looks like I'm going to finish the chapter today. Thor's the dog. Thor stood passively for his examination, unlike his master, who quipped sexual innuendos about how he wished he could get his hands on a camera as I squatted squarely behind Thor, palpating his scrotum. What I discovered was that Thor's right testicle was nowhere to be found and that his left testicle was small and shrunken. He was balding over the sides of his body and his belly was a little distended. His temperature was slightly up and the energy he had first shown me seemed to ebb from his body until he flopped to the floor, apparently exhausted. So what do you think, Doc? Is he sneaking off when I'm not looking and getting a sex change? Mr. Measley chuckled and I tried my best to crack a smile. No, not quite, but I am suspicious that he might have an estrogen-secreting tumor. At this, Measley stood up. Are you saying my dog's got cancer? I beckoned him to be seated and calm. I don't know, but what I see is a classic example of a dog becoming feminized. In a dog with only one testicle, the other one is often inside the abdomen. In Thor's case, it most likely has a tumor on it that's producing female hormones. That can make him drink more, pee more, lose hair, and generally appear more feminine. But don't worry, it can't change his sex. So, if you go into his belly and take the ball out, will he go back to being a male dog? Hopefully, yes, I said, not entirely sure. These tumors can be malignant, so we'd have to make sure that the cancer hadn't spread. He leaned back on the bench, prodded his chin in my direction, and said, "What's all this going to cost?" I gave him an estimate, and he told me I could do only minimal blood tests, no x-rays, no ultrasound, just surgery. "What's the point of expensive tests," he said, "if you're going to cut them open anyway?" And so a few days later, I found myself, scalpel in hand, poised to make an incision across Thor's sizable belly. The blood test gave me two important pieces of information. First, Thor's red blood cell count was low. He was anemic, which is not uncommon in these cases because the female hormone estrogen creates bone marrow suppression. And second, his white blood cell count was high. This struck me as strange. It smacked of an infection. I knew that Thor's temperature was slightly higher than normal, but that was all I had to go on. That is, until I stared down into Thor's open belly and got the shock of my life. It was one of those times when you look under the drape, inspect the name tag, and make sure you have anesthetized the correct animal. It was not that I was staring at something entirely new and undiscovered, but what I saw made no sense, at least not with Thor. Before me lay a large, turgid, tubular organ sitting atop loops of bowel, an organ that did not belong. What I saw was a bulging, gray-green, pus-filled uterus, the female reproductive organ inside the body of a male dog. Thor had what is referred to as a uterus masculinus, an embryonic remnant that should have disappeared long before birth but somehow persisted. No one would have been the wiser had his undescended left testicle not awoken from its slumber and begun to produce estrogen, the female hormone, ignited by a Sertoli cell tumor, if anyone is remotely interested. This surge in feminine chemicals had several effects, most of which Mr. Measley had noticed, but what he did not know, what he could not possibly have known, was that a uterus inside Thor's body started to respond to the hormones, developing an infection, hence elevated white blood cell count, known as pyometra, not uncommon after false pregnancies in bitches. The upshot of all this reproductive turmoil was that for the first and only time in my career, I had the opportunity to perform a spay and castration on the same dog. Now imagine what you're going to tell me like Mr. Measley regarding the surgical findings. "Well, Mr. Measley, you know what you were saying about Thor undergoing a secret sex change? Mr. Measley, how do you like the name Thora? It's got a certain ring to it, don't you think?" Let me just say that it was an interesting phone call. Naturally, I started with the easy stuff. Things went well, your dog's resting comfortably. But when it came to the details, a lot of static hovered between us. I stress that although Thor walked both sides of the fence, the real man in him was dominant, and Mr. Measley seemed to be satisfied. It amuses me to think that on one of the few occasions when I wasn't actually looking for a zebra, I went and found a unicorn. When Mr. Measley and Thor returned 2 weeks later, all appeared to be going well. Thor's incision had healed nicely, but what struck me was that there was something different about his owner. I couldn't put my finger on it exactly. He just seemed somehow more at ease, perhaps a little soft around the edges. "How's everything going?" I asked. "Fantastic," said Mr. Measley. "I've taken Thor on some short walks. He takes his time, but none of the other dogs have been trying it on him, not like before." I nodded my approval and then noticed that Mr. Measley was smiling. What? I said. Oh, I'm just smiling because I met a girl. Everyone down at the park noticed Thor because of his plastic lampshade and his incision. Never realized how interested some people would be. This girl, Karen, wanted to know all about it. When I told her about, you know, his little sexual deviation thing, she was fascinated. Sexual deviation will do that, I didn't say. Instead, I wished him well and almost hurried him out of the room before he had a chance to spoil things by telling me how they went straight back to his place and did it. Funny how things turn out. A dog with a feminine side playing his part and bringing out the same trait in his master. Dr. Elliot Sweet walks toward me with long, spidery strides, a frisky golden retriever bouncing by his side, blonde, feathery fur billowing as he trots. This is Whiskey, says Elliot, angling his head down in my direction. He's only 9 months, but he already has a small growth on the roof of his mouth. Elliot's tone is both sincere and incredulous at the injustice of finding this in such a young dog. As two of us stand in the middle of the ward, Whiskey tugging on his leash to the point of choking at every dog and technician that passes by, Elliot continues. The mass is raised and firm, about 5 millimeters across, sitting in the midline just behind the two central upper incisors on the hard palate. It is not painful. It is not ulcerated. Whiskey is eating and drinking fine and is otherwise a happy, healthy dog. Last night I had blood drawn for complete blood count and serum biochemistry, urine for your analysis, 3-view chest x-rays looking for metastatic disease, and a cross match just in case he needs a transfusion during or after surgery. Thankfully, in my opinion, the chest x-rays were normal. He rattles off this information with stern urgency as though there isn't a moment to lose, and I have to physically shake off the intensity of his synopsis. Whoa there, Elliot. Let's back up a little. What exactly did you tell the owners about this little lump? I told them the truth. I got right to it, straight to the bottom line. I told them that it looks like a tumor, that most oral tumors are malignant, and that it probably requires radical surgery to be removed with clean margins. I warned them that Whiskey could lose all of his upper front teeth, including the bone they are sitting in. This would leave him with a droopy Concord nose, making him look more like a tapir than a dog, but that, as long as he was able to eat and drink and breathe normally, he would be fine. He spoke with absolute clinical detachment and then added, grimly, until the cancer spread. I took a deep breath. Okay, Elliot, I have a couple questions for you, the first being, how did the owners take this news? He shook his head. Devastated, as you can imagine, they are a young couple about my age. The two of them were crying their eyes out when I told them what it was. I nodded, imagining the scene. And how long has this growth, as you call it, been around? How fast is it growing? Elliot perked up a little, obviously prepared for this line of questioning. They noticed it last night for the first time. Whiskey was rolling around on his back, getting his belly rubbed with his mouth open, tongue lolling off to one side, and the girlfriend caught a glimpse of his lump sitting behind the front teeth. They brought him in right away. I told them it was good, catching it while it was small. I look at the carefree dog dancing at Elliot's feet and feel my skepticism rising. Time to take a gander. I squat down, and Elliot joins me as we engage in a playful wrestling match, which ultimately reproduces the owner's observation technique by getting Whiskey to roll on his back while scratching his belly. The bump is exactly as Elliot described. We get back to our feet, and I'm thinking about where I should begin. Well, Elliot, let me start by saying you're absolutely correct. The majority of oral tumors that I see in dogs are malignant. When I look at Whiskey's lump, it does not look like an abscess or a foreign body or the result of some kind of oral trauma. So thinking that it had to be a tumor is a fairly reasonable assumption. Elliot studies me with arms folded high and tight across his chest. However, before jumping into a world of doom and gloom with the owners, you might want to consider a few important factors in this case. First, Whiskey's age. He's awfully young for a tumor. I'm not saying that age precludes cancer. It's just worth noting. Second, this owner only noticed the lump last night. We have no idea how long it has been there and how fast it is growing, if at all. But I thought that if we need to get a biopsy, we might as well cut it out as completely as possible at the time as a single procedure, and given its location, this will mean radical surgery. I can feel him going on the defensive, frustrated that his impressive textbook knowledge is not panning out in the real world, that I am not commending him on a job well done. Better to let him down here, just the two of us, than in front of his peers on rounds. Your workup for oral cancer was excellent, Elliot. There is one small problem. Elliot looks confused, unable to comprehend the possibility of an oversight. It's not cancer. In fact, it's not a tumor at all. What Whiskey has is a completely normal anatomical structure, which in his case happens to be slightly more prominent than most. It is called an incisive papilla, much overlooked little lump with a pair of tiny ducts on either side of it communicating with the vomeronasal organ involved in pheromone perception. Owners just hadn't noticed it until last night. Elliot has no color to lose, but even the stubbly shadow of his beard pales to a lighter shade of gray. Oh, God. Oh, crap, is all he can manage. Hey, don't worry. Mistakes happen. But I painted such a horrible picture for the owners. They were so upset, and now you're telling me that this dog is absolutely normal. He slaps a mighty palm against his domed forehead. If I were you, I would tell them the truth that we believe the lump is an unusual manifestation of a completely benign and normal structure, that our recommendation, at least for now, is to watch and wait. Make sure you convey that there is nothing to worry about. Elliot nods, but his mind is already racing ahead. But what about all their money I've spent, the blood, the urine, the x-rays? They were all a complete waste. I smile. Elliot has his lesson, and now I have mine. Watching the distress and panic rising in this young and talented man, I am reminded that it is important to remember and respect how all new vets enter this world and to appreciate and savor how far we all manage to come. No one wants to put an animal through unnecessary tests or recklessly spend an owner's money, but Elliot's mistake is born of inexperience, not negligence, motivated by his desire to help an animal, not to make a fast buck. Without trying to sound glib, I wonder if I can help him to see at least one bright side. You know what, Elliot, from what you describe with these owners, I virtually guarantee that they will have absolutely no problem over the money you have already spent. He looks down at me, incredulous, as I turn to leave and says, "Why?" And over my shoulder I reply, "Because you just cured their dog of cancer." And that is the end of that chapter. Okay, we have about 5 or 6 minutes left. So from The Vet is In, Cancer Magazine, Mind and Body, Dr. Arnold Plotnick has written an article on treating feline herpes virus. And he is the founder of Manhattan Cat Specialist, a feline-exclusive veterinary practice on Manhattan's Upper West Side. He is also an author of the original Cat Fancy Cat Bible, and he contributes a lot to feline publications. And now the article. Cats can catch a cold just like people do. The vast majority of these upper respiratory infections are viral in nature, and the primary culprit is the feline herpes virus. Once exposed to the virus, there is an incubation period of 2 to 5 days, after which cats develop clinical signs. A variety of signs are possible. Sneezing is by far the most common, and runny eyes, snotty nose, congested breathing, decreased appetite, and generalized lethargy are also often present. Treatment of viral upper respiratory infections is largely aimed at managing the symptoms. Adult cats with mild symptoms, little sneezing, slight watery nasal and ocular discharge, no lethargy or decreased appetite, may not require any specific treatment other than close monitoring. As with humans, most cats with colds recover on their own at home in a week or two. Bring on antibiotics. For cats with more pronounced symptoms, antibiotics may be prescribed. Antibiotics don't treat the viral infection per se, they help prevent the development of bacterial infections that often occur secondary to the viral infection. I usually prescribe antibiotics early in the course of the illness in kittens because they are so fragile. Some cats get pretty sick from the herpes virus and may require additional measures, including hospitalization. Cats with severe nasal congestion may have a poor appetite because they cannot smell their food. These cats may require appetite stimulants and or syringe feeding till the congestion resolves. Cats who won't drink may require either subcutaneous, which is under the skin, or intravenous fluid therapy to maintain hydration. Time for eye drops. Although the viral upper respiratory infections commonly cause conjunctivitis, which is inflammation of the tissues around the eyes, in humans we often call this pink eye, feline herpes virus is notorious for its ability to cause more severe eye problems, in particular corneal ulcers. The cornea is loaded with pain receptors, and cats with corneal irritation from the herpes virus are uncomfortable. To prevent permanent damage to the eyes, corneal ulcers that occur due to the feline herpes virus require treatment, usually with antiviral eye drops. This is labor-intensive, as most antiviral drops need to be administered 4 to 6 times daily to be maximally effective. As you might imagine, cats do not enjoy this. Get antiviral. Although most cats conquer their viral respiratory infection on their own, persistent cases may benefit from antiviral medications. The antiviral drug famciclovir, given twice daily, has been shown to be safe and effective in both adult cats and kittens. When given at the proper dosage, therapeutic levels of famciclovir, that's F-A-M-C-I-C-L-O-V-I-R, will be achieved in the tears as well as the bloodstream, which helps speed the resolution of any symptoms involving the eyes. Antiviral medications can be expensive, unfortunately, and achieving the proper dose using famciclovir tablets can be tricky. Having the medication compounded into a flavored liquid may allow for more accurate dosing. However, famciclovir has a bitter taste that can be difficult to mask. Increased humidity. Cats with feline herpes virus infection often have nasal congestion, and increasing the humidity in their environment may help. Take the cat into the bathroom and run the hot water in the shower so that the bathroom gets very steamy. Let the cat sit in the steamy bathroom for 10 to 15 minutes twice daily. Most of my clients are happy to do this for their cat, and many feel that it is helpful. Nasal and ocular discharge, when it dries, can irritate the skin beneath it. Gently wipe away nasal or eye discharge that accumulates with a moist tissue, because cats with copious nasal discharge may have an impaired sense of smell. I advise clients to feed their cats very tasty, strong-smelling food. Herpes viruses stay in the body forever, and once the symptoms have resolved, cats remain lifelong carriers. The virus stays dormant in the body, but may periodically reemerge when the cat's immune system is suppressed. During these times, cats may show symptoms again and may be contagious to other cats. And a quick sidebar, does lysine work? Many veterinarians were and still are prescribing the amino acid lysine as adjunct therapy for feline herpes virus infections, believing that lysine speeds the resolution of the infection and may help prevent future infections. However, several clinical studies have shown that lysine is not effective for the prevention or the treatment of feline herpes virus infection, and many veterinarians have stopped prescribing it. Personally, I'm on the fence. Despite the lack of scientific evidence, I have a few clients who swear by it, telling me that the moment they stop giving lysine, the symptoms return. Veterinary lysine products are available in many forms, and the oral gel and the chicken liver flavored treats are quite palatable. While it is certainly not one of my first-line treatments, if a client wants to give lysine a try, I won't discourage it, especially if the cat enjoys the taste of it. And with that article, we have come to the end of our allotted time. So until next week, this is Irene Friedman. As always, reminding you to spay and neuter your cats and dogs. Still a lot of kittens out there. No-kill shelter where I volunteer, we're still getting calls about people finding litters of kittens. So spay and neuter. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening, and have a great day and a great week. Bye, everyone.